What's up, After Buzzers and Glow fans? Let me tell you, you better get really comfortable and stay tuned because this is the biggest guest and you won't want to miss it.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, After Buzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Got a jam to this.
That's right.
Yes.
That's right.
I do know this song, Rick. Okay.
You still know Paradise City.
I know this one, though. It's Pour Some Sugar on Me, let me tell you. What is up, everyone? Thank you so much for joining us. I know that we covered all the episodes for Glow already, but we had to come back for this one. I am so excited. So we're just going to jump right in. My name is Candace Cruz, and I'm joined by an amazing panel.
Ricky the Dragon Hog!
Take it, sir. And who else do we have over here? The couch?
How's it going, everybody?
Little Egypt. Take it away.
That's right. And I'm original Glow Girl Little Egypt, and I have the honor of introducing you to the man who needs no introduction. This man is the life of parties he never attends. He can speak French in Russian. Sharks have a week dedicated just to him. The police have often questioned him just because they find him interesting. He never says something tastes like chicken. Not even chicken. His blood smells like cologne. It's true. People hang on his every word, even the prepositions. He got nominated for a Screen Actors Guild Award simply by standing naked. This man can disarm you with his looks or his hands. Ladies and gentlemen, we would love to welcome the star of Glow Netflix to our show, Mark Maron!
Yeah!
That is one hell of an introduction, sir.
That's quite an intro. I didn't know if I was getting in trouble or not.
What's it like that your blood smells like cologne? I really want to know.
I had no idea that was a reality. I don't know how anyone would find that out. Did you talk to some vampires that I used
Googled
to date?
It. I Googled best bits for Mark, oh, yeah. So it just came right up.
I do wear patchouli, so that tends to... So maybe it's in my bloodstream. It would have to be, I think, at this point.
Yeah, there you go.
Not everyone can wear that stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got to be prepared in case you accidentally have to go to Bumper Shoot.
Yeah, Bumper Shoot or like whatever. It's more of a hippie girl kind of thing, but I guess I've been wearing it long enough that I've made it my own. Or maybe I have a little hippie girl inside me.
I mean, that could be a possibility.
Yeah,
I feel
sure.
Like it would have to be.
Yeah, yeah.
And congrats, by the way,
Thank you.
All of the nominations. That's huge for
I
you
very
guys.
I had little to do with about eight of them.
Well, you were in two of them at least.
Yeah.
Two out of eight.
I think
so. Two out of ten is great.
Yeah.
We have casting for comedy series. Cinematography for a single camera series, comedy series total, directing for a comedy series, hairstyling, main title design.
I did do all the hairstyling.
Yeah.
I know. I figured you did.
No, I didn't. They're geniuses, though.
Yeah. Wow. They really
hours,
are.
Hours.
At least three, right?
I can makeup, average three. Production, stunt coordination. Did you get to do any stunts?
Not really. I didn't need to be coached on the one time I fell out of the ring. It happened naturally, and they got the one that was real.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
That's
nice.
Awesome.
One shot.
Yeah.
Easy.
I tried to do it a couple of times, but I didn't capture the natural humor of actually falling out of the ring. Yeah,
that's my favorite bit of physical comedy from season one, by the way.
Really? That?
It's just like it's you know, pardon my expression if that was real, but it's just so inept that
I think it was the real one. There's a timing to it. It worked out pretty well.
Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah.
So what was it like living in the 80s? What was that like for you?
Well, I mean, I lived in the 80s, for real, but not those 80s. I think, like, 1980, what are we, it was probably, I think the show's got to be 85, 86.
It was 86 to 89.
That you guys, right. So so I was already, I was in my 20s, my late 20s, but I was not, I don't think I was dressing quite like that. I don't think I was that over the top. I think I was doing more of a scruffy thing. But it is weird to be around it again. It's sort of amazing that we just accepted all of those colors without really arguing or questioning that there were certain outfits where you're like, no, that can't have been the way it was. And the hair, like a lot of the hair I remember, but it's like the amount of work and it took for some people to get ready is just crazy. Like in this season where when Chris Lowell as Bash is wearing all those layers for prep day. I mean, like, I remember dudes doing that. Like, two polo shirts, so you had both collars going and maybe one over it. It was ridiculous.
That came back in the 2000s, but not anywhere near what you guys did. the layering.
No, it was like that was. I remember it. It all seemed very like familiar to me. I don't. It doesn't seem that far away for me. I imagine people that weren't alive during that time. But when I'm on set and stuff, and it's around, I'm like, yeah. I mean, I lived through it, and I was a conscious grown person. So it's not. I'm not wandering around some Martian landscape.
Right. So funny. Oh, my God. Well, let's talk about GLOW and how you got cast for the show, because everyone kind of has their own little story. And yours was pretty simple, actually, wasn't it?
Well, I had done 4 seasons of my own show on IFC, and I stopped it because I felt like it was over. And I was not really, you know, looking for anything. You know, I do the podcast twice a week, so that takes up a lot of time. I do stand-up. And I was kind of looking to take a break, but I kind of wanted to do a show where I didn't play myself. And that script came through my agent, through my manager. So someone got me the script between the two of them. And I just looked at that guy, at Sam's lines and who he was in the script. And I thought, like, I could do that guy. It was very immediate connection to the material. So my agent had me put myself on tape. So I put on a yellow Lacoste shirt that I actually owned. I went down to the store, Society of Spectacle, in Highland Park, because I know the women who own it, and I found some aviator glasses because I felt like very strongly about aviator frames. And I read it with my physical trainer, this woman who's also an actress. She read Allison's part, and I have a part-time assistant who shot me on my phone, and we did like 3 takes and sent them in. And they booked me off of that.
Please tell me it's because this is my favorite line in all the series, is when you're looking at Allison Brie, you're like, I don't know if you're kind of hot, or I want to do you, but I don't know. Please tell me that's what you auditioned with.
Yeah, that was one of the scenes.
Oh my gosh, because it's so good. I literally, it's like every time I think of you, that's like the one scene that always.
It was those scenes, with me auditioning her and talking to her. Yeah.
Amazing.
Ruth. That's not a great name, Ruth.
Yeah, you're so good at that. I love it.
You said that you felt an immediate connection to the source material, to the script. I wanted to know if you had any inspirations for the character of Sam Sylvia or anyone in mind as you read that character.
No, strangely, like, you know, being that I was alive then, and I was certainly in the late 80s, you know, I had done my share of coke. I had been, you know, an asshole. I had certainly drank my share of booze. I had been sort of delusional at times about who I was in the world and somewhat emotionally hostile. So that guy was sort of familiar to me from my own experiences with myself, though he lacks a lot of self-awareness in season one. In season two, you find that he's a little more on to himself. I think that the one person that really stuck in my mind as some sort of template or some sort of inspiration was probably my friend Dave Attell, the comedian.
Yeah.
Like there's something about his kind of strange emotional disconnect, but weird, intensity that, and his lifestyle as well. Well, we both lived it, but he sort of there was something about his kind of vibe that was in my mind. I don't think I've ever told anybody that.
I definitely can see that now that you said that.
Oh yeah,
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And while we're on the subject, you know, you're saying about you sort of saw a little bit of yourself in Sam?
I mean, if you're a certain type of guy, you know, who's lived a certain type of life and you're of a certain age, I mean, you've either got some of that guy in you or you don't. But, I mean, I don't think that guy is that unusual a guy for the time, and even now in a different way. But to be so shameless and brazen, I just don't, like... I think he's very familiar to a lot of people of a certain generation, you know, because a lot of people really like Sam, and I'm surprisingly a lot of women really like Sam, and he is, you know, at this particular juncture in culture, you know, around the Me Too movement and some of the stories that are coming out and the way that that we're kind of shifting, you know, it's sort of surprising that he represents something that they still find charming, and I think it's because he is somewhat redeemable, and he is, and it's an important character, I think, in some way at this time in history, because the fact that he is redeemable and that he is cranky and a bit of a sexist, but he is somebody who you feel empathy for. Mm-hmm. And I think that those guys sort of exist. I mean, I think a lot of people knew their dad's friends were like this, and you know, there's something about Sam that I think is not only familiar to me, but I think to a lot of people.
Well, I love the character development between season one and season two. And I really, going off of what you just said, I feel like watching it as a woman in the Me Too movement, I realize where a lot of them are coming from, because
right.
you almost have this element of like comfortability. Like you still trust him, even though he can be, you know,
right.
a little rough around the edges.
Right.
There's something in him, and I think Ruth even shows that by her sticking around him a lot, that there's something in there that like you just want to trust yourself almost, or yeah. you want to be a better person, you just don't know how to.
Yeah, he's like sort of emotionally hobbled,
right?
And it's more of, you know, it's not really a menacing thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a sad thing, that there's a, you know, an emotional disconnect or heartbreak or neediness to that guy. Mm-hmm. That it's not abusive or hostile, yeah. in the same way. He's not sociopathic. He's just a lonely guy that you know, hides his disappointment through bravado.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I know that guy.
Yeah, I think we know a lot of them.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot of them. But I did love the element, the relationship between you and Ruth in that movie theater when she divulged that situation. I think that also was a turning point, and probably why a lot of women do really love your character, because you did stand up for her at that point.
Well, sure. I mean, I think that I would. I think most guys would. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that scene was beautifully written, and Allison and I have a good connection. You know, mm-hmm. we have it, you know, off screen and on screen, and it's really a vital part of that relationship working, is that we do like each other and we do have some sort of you know chemistry.
How much of a collaboration do you and Allison have? Like, how much do you guys talk about it prior to filming, or do you guys just jump right in and kind of play and see what happens?
I think, well, mostly we read through stuff before, but mm-hmm. I mean, but it's usually before we shoot. It's not like we're taking a day
right.
to work stuff out, and then you kind of feel it out. And, you know, the characters at this point are pretty set,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, our dynamic is sort of set. And I just try to stay as open as possible emotionally in the scene, and as does she. And you know, there's real feelings there. So if they can happen, then they happen, and they usually happen.
So speaking of feelings with you and Ruth's character, it looked we actually spoke about this, about, you know, if that relationship evolved into more of an intimate relationship
uh-huh.
between you and Ruth. Wow, would you like to see it go in that direction?
I don't know. I don't know that it's that it's necessary in the sense that I don't know that either of them really want it. You know, I think what you're seeing is a friendship between two sort of needy people who are prone to sexualizing, as a way of not really emotionally engaging, right? So the fact that we don't, and we make it through that, like there's some pretty powerful stuff, you know, when she kind of like goes out and you know sleeps with Russell, you know, at me in a way, or to you know, not in a hostile way, but to sort of like get some territory emotionally. The way that Sam takes that is sort of like, it's kind of intense and heartbreaking, that, you know, he just kind of sucks it up as a guy who's been through stuff before, you know, and just moves on past it, but doesn't hold her in any different light. Do you know what I mean? It's like, all right, so that's how it's going to, okay. So, you know, there's a persistence to the relationship, but I don't know that it should be sexual, really.
Well, I was thinking about this.
We'll see what they make us do.
Are you looking forward to doing a sex scene?
I kind of did one first season, mm-hmm. but not really.
Right.
It was a post-sex scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a weird thing to do on set. It's a little odd.
I would think so.
Is that why you have a personal trainer, to do your own steel horse sex scene?
I when you're on set, and I toured Europe a bit, and then after Glow, there's a lot of craft services. So by the time I went to Europe about a month ago to tour, and with my girlfriend, and we're eating, and then I come back, I do this little film in Alabama, and then I'm like, I just got to the point where I'm like, I have to get back to some manageable place with this shit.
We have a couple of questions from the chat, real quick.
Did I finish? The sexing thing. The weird thing about sexing is that, you know, I didn't really do one, but you sort of kind of, you have choices. You know, they kind of empty the set of anybody who isn't necessary, and you're naked, and you wear like a sock on your cock.
Yeah,
Johnson. I don't know. What do you call it? Yeah.
Did I not say the right word? Concussor.
I think we can.
We try to stay away from the F word, but all the other words. Okay. Yeah.
But you know, but there was a point there. Where I'm like, what is the point of this thing? This is not. You know, you're not hiding. What are you really hiding? It just makes it look weird. But the thing was, is that I had to make myself available for nudity, because if all those women were, yeah, I would certainly not, you know, I had to sign the waiver without even thinking about it. And I didn't know how it would come. I was hoping it would just be the back. I don't really need the meme of my Johnson out in the world necessarily for the rest of time. But it was just an ass shot, and I thought it was pretty good.
Something a little bit more tame, but on that subject, I was curious. I've been curious about this. I forgot to ask Britt Baron this question, so I figured we've got you. So when you get the script, and you're going through the script, and you find out, it's very typical that Sam's going to do this, but I would love to know what you, as Marc Maron, you read and you're like, oh, I have to kiss Britt in this scene. I don't know if, like, either any, like, thoughts going through your head just to be like, oh, okay, this is interesting.
Because the actress is so young, you thought about how that makes you feel.
I know you guys are actors, but I don't know if you're just kind of like,
Well, you mean that, you know, like, you mean because that she's my daughter, or just because she's
kind of both. Yeah, I mean, kind of both.
Screen kissing is a little odd. You know, most of us are grown-ups, and, you know, and most of us have kissed people with or without feeling. So, like, or, you know, however it's going to go, you don't really know. You don't, the times I've done it, which aren't a lot, you kind of talk about it, but you don't really know what's going to happen until you do, and how much anyone's going to let go or be in it. But that was very quick, that one. I don't know that I thought, you know, one way or the other about it. I just took that scene. I try to, like, look at what's happening in the scripts. I get the scripts. I read them. I'm not great at reading scripts because I have a hard time picturing things. But I look at the dialogue. And then I kind of just, like, wait till it happens and play it the way, you know, it was written, and see what happens on set. I don't put a lot of thought into it. That was a very quick kiss. What was more important in that scene was, you know, for that reaction to happen, for whatever that was, when I find that information out that she's my daughter, you know, like, what happens in that moment? And you can't really know until you start playing with it. But the kiss, I didn't think one way or the other. I'm not sure. Like, it wasn't that long. It was only, like,
He's
getting defensive.
Well, so was it, like, did you get the script, and that's when you found out, oh, so Britt's my daughter?
Yeah, a lot of people knew before me. I was always the last one to read scripts, because, like, it's difficult for me to read scripts. And I usually wait a couple days, because they're usually writing during the shooting, and we'll have a couple stacked up. But when I'm in the one we're doing, I'm not reading the other one. Right, you know, I'm going to wait, but everyone else, all the girls are sort of like, but they read it right away, and like, oh my God, did you? And I'm like, no, we're still doing this one.
Awesome.
I don't need to. Awesome. I can't.
Well, also, I feel like you don't want to, like, preempt your performance either if you're reading the scripts ahead and like, play the ending. You almost want to play, like, what's right in front of you.
Yeah, I think more for me it's just sort of like there's always so much. Like, there's never an end to stuff coming at you to read and do and, you know, think about. So, I don't show up and go, like, I didn't read it. That may have happened. It may have happened where I show up and I'm like, I remember this part. But, you know, you just focus. You go scene for scene. You know, I know what the dude... who the guy is. So it's like, what are we doing here? And the interesting thing about shooting television like this is that, you know, each scene is only, you know, you're not going to go more than 3 or 4 minutes in a scene. So you kind of, like, you can really focus on it in real time. You know, you can just sort of load up before what you have to do in that moment. And I sort of do that to a fault in some degree. I think next season I need to figure out how to sort of keep the whole story in my head, because I think it would be helpful. But I'm very in the present usually.
Explain to us the differences for you between acting and comedy, because obviously you're super comfortable with the comedy. It's what you were brought up on, and now you're acting.
Well, I mean, comedy is like it's its own set of muscles, and I've been doing it most of my life. You know, so I go. you know, the stage is very familiar to me. It took a long time, but, you know, over time, there's no fear element. It's what you do, and you have a certain amount of as much freedom as you want up there. And once you get control of over the craft of it, you know, it's what you do. So, but it is specific. I mean, it's me alone doing stuff that I create in that moment. Acting is different because it's a lot of stopping and starting. It's a lot of, you know, holding certain emotions, holding certain elements of the character. And it's relatively new to me. But I did, I think most of the training that I did was, I did 4 seasons of my own show. And I really didn't know what I was doing going into that. But I wrote and I produced and I acted and I was in every scene of the thing. So it was sort of really a training camp for all that stuff. And I knew the first couple seasons I'd sort of take a hit in terms of getting the hang of it. And I think same with... Now, first season of Glow came out really well. I thought it was great. But, you know, it takes a while to settle into a guy. And I think second season, you know, Sam really kind of gets well-rounded out, both because of the writing and because of me. But, you know, there is sort of a curve on this stuff, you know, for me anyways. I think people that all they do is act, I mean, it's a different thing. I have to learn how to appreciate the fact that, like, you know, we're going to do this thing. It's going to take 3 minutes, and then we're going to switch angles, and we'll do another 3 minutes, and then, you know, we'll do your coverage, you know, in about a half hour, you know, and you just kind of, that stopping and starting and waiting thing, it doesn't, it's not my nature. You know, I kind of need things to happen now. So I have to learn, and I'm learning how to sort of appreciate the time that you do spend on camera. It's like, well, this is it, you know, action and cut. Oh, that was it? Can we do it again? Yes, we can do it again. Oh, good.
Great. Can we do that 3 minutes all over again? I think you also had some people in the chat as well, didn't you?
Yeah, just some quick questions from the chat. We got some people watching from Mexico. We got some people watching from Iceland.
Amazing.
All over the place. Sophia says, greetings from Mexico, and she wants to know if you've ever experienced something similar to post-shooting depression when a shoot wraps.
Well, yeah, because there is that, you know, but I stay very busy. But sure, there is sort of a, and I think it happens for most people involved in these shows or movies or whatever, because you are a community. And, you know, once the shooting starts, I mean, everybody is involved in this one thing very intensely for 3 months or 2.5 months or 3 months, and you're with each other every day, and you know, it's a functioning sort of ecosystem on all levels, down to catering, you know, down to, you know, the person, you know, all, it's just its own world. So you get emotionally connected to that, and you get to know everybody, and you know, and when you're acting, it's a lot of vulnerability around. People are naked, people are crying, people are throwing each other around. So the sort of bonds, it's sort of like camp, you know, when you leave, when camp's over, you're sort of sad. I think it probably happens more intensely to the women because they're really in a clump, with, you know, and doing very amazing things physically and stuff and making connections. But, yeah, you all of a sudden your days, you know, you're doing 12 to 13, 14-hour days sometimes. So, yeah, you get a little post-production depression. But I just, you know, stay busy. Everyone seems to stay busy. But then you're kind of into the promotion. A month goes by or so, and then you're promoting, and you see everybody again, and then you hope that you get to do it again, go back to camp.
Yeah. Tom Sawyer, 1876, now that you've given us this exclusive, wants to know, is there any way we can get David Tell to play your brother on the show?
That's a good idea.
Right?
Yeah.
And final quick question from Eva from Iceland. Do you like Dracula movies?
No, I can't say that I'm a horror guy. My brother was. I'm sorry that I don't. You know, I wish... I tend to gravitate towards things that are painfully real as opposed to painfully abstract or spectacular and horror and that kind of stuff.
Well, that leads perfectly into a question that I had for you. Sorry. So, since you don't like horror movies, yet Sam Sylvia is an auteur of horror movies, I was curious... do you have an idea in your head of what Gina the Machina looks like? And is there any chance that we might get a meta episode down the line of a Sam Sylvia film like we had the Glow
episode? Oh, that'd be great. You know, I mean, that's a question for Liz and Carly. Well, yeah, I have ideas of that. I feel like that, you know, there's an era or of horror like in the early, in the 70s. You know, the stuff that, you know, maybe Rob Zombie makes fun of, right, like the Tobe Hooper and stuff, but also a little more polish. I mean, I think he's a De Palma freak, so there's going to be an artiness to it. But I feel, you know, I have a good sense of you know, how it looks. But I don't know that I can track it to exactly directors. I know that there's a big De Palma connection, but he's not fundamentally a horror director, right?
Yeah.
But I think those kind of rough, you know, weird...
Somewhere between De Palma and Cronenberg, maybe?
Well, Cronenberg I hadn't really thought of. I like Cronenberg, but like he seems a little more... Sam seems a little more traditional in his references. Like Cronenberg is definitely more... science fiction, right? Mm. Like Scanners. Mm. Yeah. And,
Scanners, so good.
Yeah, right? It's great.
Because Cronenberg's more about body horror, and De Palma's more about, like, the metaphysical, psychological.
Yeah,
thriller, like, suspense.
Yeah, somewhere in the middle there. Yeah. Yeah, but I think Sam likes the sci-fi, you know, because he did try to construct a fairly elaborate science fiction.
It's
yeah, yeah. Well, just that whole the Kuntar thing in season one was a pretty kind of like mythological landscape.
Perfect.
Yeah. So I know that the ladies are, you know, they're training, they're learning the wrestling. You know, I've told all of them, like, you officially can sit there and tell yourselves that you're not just actors, actresses. You are wrestlers because you're going through this. I don't know what your, like, production schedule is like. I don't know if it's, like, you know, like, their training, and if you're just kind of like, no, I show up to set, and I just get to do my scenes, and or if there's something else for you behind the scenes that you have to do, too.
There isn't.
That's awesome. There you go.
But yeah, no, they spend a lot of time working and training and, you know, building these, you know, these... moves and relationships, and I do show up and do my stuff, but I got to suit up and I'm there all day. It's not, you know, I don't come in and go out because, you know, most of the scenes involve at least one or two people, if not more. But there is, and it's not easy to shoot even a small scene with just a little dialogue between me if there's more than three or people there. I mean, it's hard to cover. Like, there's a lot of coverage when you have that much, you know, that many people. But no, there's nothing really required of me off camera, you know, other than to stay in Sam. They have a lot more work to do. That is true.
Are you more of a character actor where you stay in Sam the whole time that you're on set, or are you come and go freely with him?
Yeah, I don't know that, like, you know, Sam is, for me, is more about turning some things off in that I have in me and just sort of looking at the scripts. I'm not methody, you know, I don't know. Yeah. Like, I'd like to have the skill set to sort of, like, I don't think that Sam in some ways is like that much. It's in my wheelhouse, so, like, I don't have to learn a Russian accent or anything. Mm-hmm. So what I'm really sort of holding on to is just trying not to let me be Sam.
Like, I mean, that's very...
And in the sense that, you know, like in second season when he does, you know, sort of turn out to be a little bit more self-aware and a little bit more, you know, empathetic, you know, I just didn't, like, I had this problem where I'm like, am I still doing Sam? Am I... and you look at it, and I am, you know, I am. But when you go into it, I think it's a common problem. I think Dax Shepard told me that Kristen, he had the same issue when he started season two of Parenthood. Mm-hmm. And Kristen Bell just said, no, that's just what the second season's like. Yeah. You know the guy.
I love that.
What about being all around all the women? Do you try and distance yourself from the women? Is it too much estrogen? Do you not want to kind of connect with them on their culture level? I mean, do you avoid them? What's it like on
first
the set
season?
For you?
I minded my own business because there's a lot going on. They're all sitting in the same place, and there's a lot of energy over there, a lot of talking, a lot of electricity out over there. And I was just sort of like, that's going to be exhausting if I'm over there.
Yeah.
And
self-preservation.
A little bit, you know, and also for the character's sake, too.
Of course.
You know. And then, like, second season, I sat with everybody, and it was fine. I tend to kind of, like, I'm a little more isolating, but, like, I mind my own business in a lot of ways. You know, I'm sort of, I'm hanging out. But it's an ensemble show. You know, there's no, you know, nobody's running around, you know, being the star, really. And everybody's just sort of doing their own thing. And, you know, there's group discussions sometimes, and sometimes not a lot of people looking at their phones and stuff. But I did integrate last season, yes.
So what's it like when you're watching these girls wrestle? Like, for a lot of them, except for Kia, it was their first time wrestling. You're watching them break through their fears, taking bumps.
Yeah.
You know, are you proud of them?
Oh, yeah. No, I get very moved. I mean, I talk about that. Like, even when the first season, you know, just at the very beginning, before the wrestling really started, when when Betty attacks Allie, you know, when she finds out about her husband, you know, like I was watching that from up on the stairs, you know, over and over again. And it was like, it got me choked up because the intensity of emotion that comes from that was different, though, than them successfully executing moves. But they're still the same thing. It's almost like watching a ballet or a dance performance or a theater performance. There's an element to it that is very emotional because, you know, when it lands, you know, it's like, oh, wow. Yeah, I get very moved by the whole thing. And yeah, proud, sure, yeah.
So where are you at with your with wrestling? Were you watching it growing up, or are you seeing it kind of evolve in front of you for the first time?
Well, I did not watch when I was growing up. I mean, you know, I'm 54, so I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and like thinking about what I was doing as a kid, because I get this question a lot, and I'm not a wrestling kid, but back then, you know, I remember, like, wrestling was not what it is now. I mean, when I was, 63, 73, so when I was, like, 13 in 1976, it was still, you know, bloody guys in unitards, you know, running around veterans halls, you know, and they would have local wrestling on Sunday, you know, and I would see it from Civic Auditorium. Yeah. And it was just like, there was no spectacle other than, you know, whatever those guys brought to it in their little leotards. Sure. Like, so it didn't really register with me, but I do remember seeing Wrestling Magazine at Skaggs Drugstore, and it was just always like, you know, dudes being held with just blood all over everything. Yeah. Uh-huh. And, but it did not have the mainstream sort of appeal that I think happened in the 80s, where, like, it really became a spectacle that a lot of kids got involved with, that families got involved with, that was very accessible. But when I was a kid, it was still like a regional shit show, and it was very raw. And it just wasn't my bag. But as time went on, my producer of my podcast, Brendan McDonald, you know, he was a wrestling kid. And, you know, over the years of us working together in radio and on the podcast, like, I have a tremendous respect for him. He's a very brilliant guy. And we've known each other a long time, but he really loves wrestling. Mm-hmm. So, like, over the years, whether it be on radio or in the podcast, because of him, I've interviewed many wrestlers, you know. Mick Foley, early on when I was at Air America, would come in and do bits with us, and I got to know Mick Foley. And then on the podcast, Colt Cabana came in and talked to me about, you know, the sort of resurgence of those independent sort of wrestling stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I got Punk on because Punk and Colt are buddies, and then Punk was on my show playing himself. And then I talked to his wife, AJ Lee, is that her name? Mm-hmm. And so, like, you know, over time, you know, and Kia, I talked to, I've got to understand wrestling, I've got to understand, you know, the spectacle of it, what goes into it, the entertainment factor of it, the sport of it to a degree, but, like, I grew to respect it and understand it and see it for what it is.
So when I look at wrestling, I see it as live entertainment. Often, to me, it's very similar to comedy in a sense. You're on stage, you're live, you've got to make it happen, right. You've got to convince an audience.
Yeah.
You know, you're selling something. I mean, do you
see
that?
And also the way it starts, like those rough rooms that you do, like, you know, getting to hone your craft, you know, for 50 people or 20 people.
Right.
In nowhere, in a backyard, right. Or in right. a small right. hall. You know, that certainly is similar to the, you know, sort of open mic circuit, or doing, you know, small clubs or as an opener or middle act, learning how to do it. But there is sort of like there's similarities in like what you just said, but there's the fact that you have to sort of like coordinate and, you know, do this dance with someone else, or maybe two people or three people, mm-hmm. or whoever's going to, you know, fly in at any moment with a chair. That's a little different than comedy. You really hope that no one shows up on stage with a chair in stand-up.
Yeah, I'd like to see you take a bump.
Yeah, it'll probably happen. I assume that.
Well, have you never been on a card with Brody Stevens before?
Yeah, I have. You know, but yeah, Brody's Brody. Yeah, Brody's his own thing.
For sure.
But yeah, no, I think that'll probably happen. I can't imagine that they won't figure out a way for me to get in the ring.
I would love to see that.
Speaking of that, lately, so many members of the cast, ever since season one wrapped, really, have been involved with WWE. They've been going to WWE events. They've been showing up ringside at events. And they were recently on Monday Night Raw.
Drop the mic.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
But I want to know, have they reached out to you at all? Is there any interest on either side about you? Maybe
I haven't really heard. I mean, you know, usually when they're going to go do something, somebody, I think, tells me. But no, I haven't really had any direct connection. I do know guys who are wrestling fans, and we're all very excited that the sort of authenticity of what we're doing because of Chavo's, you know, input has really, you know, brought along that fan base. I mean, like, you know, I think that it's a kind of a beautiful thing that they feel respected and understood, and that, you know, that we're doing it correctly in terms of how we're showing wrestling and what goes, how it's done behind the scenes and what happens in the ring. That the fact that the wrestling community is into it for the most part is really a testament to the work that Chavo's done and all the girls, for sure.
Sure. Is that something that you'd be interested in, working with WWE?
I mean, I don't know. You know, I feel like a fraud. You know, I mean, I think I should go to a match or two. I would like to go see some.
We'll take you sometime.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a deal. Because my thing is, I could see you getting in the ring, grabbing the mic, and just burning all those guys because your stand-up comedy, you know, experience. It's like, that's part that I could see. Maybe not, like, wrestling, but just grabbing the mic and just doing your thing and just making them all look like fools.
Yeah, I could try that, but then I'd probably have to take a bump, right?
That'd be awesome.
John Stewart only had to take one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Wait, when was that?
SummerSlam a couple years ago. After SummerSlam.
How'd he do?
He did great.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I kind of want to take it back a little bit when you were talking about your podcast. You've interviewed so many amazing people over the years. Who has been the most influential person you've talked to, whether or not they were involved in wrestling?
Influential or...
Inspirational or entertaining, whatever, you know, element.
I'm always very surprised by, you know, we've done so many now. We're coming up on 1,000. I think we're in the mid-900s.
It's incredible.
You know, we do two a week, and it's a hard question for me to answer because there's very few that I don't find that the story is inspirational or interesting or I learned something or I'm sort of surprised.
Right.
You know, I'm always surprised. You know, there's certainly stories that are sort of harrowing, and it's sort of amazing that people get out. And then, you know, there's, you know, Obama was on, and that was, you know, sort of, you know, kind of amazing but it was very amazing. And there's a lot of inspiration in that talk, but he was, you know, an inspirational guy. But there's also inspiration in a lot of the stories of people overcoming certain obstacles in their own lives. A lot of people that people don't even know, but that have, you know, had sort of a rough go at it and transcended. But it happens a lot on the show. It's hard for me to really focus in on any in particular. Like even like this week, tomorrow we're going to have Gus Van Sant on, the film director. And you know, he's done a lot of interesting stuff. And I don't know if that it was necessarily inspirational in a broad sense, but, you know, just knowing where he came from, that I had no idea how he started and what sort of brought him to his particular vision and why he's so eclectic in what he chooses to do. And then on Thursday, like this week, we have David Diggs, who is he does a guest role on Black-ish, but he was also the original Jefferson in the musical Hamilton.
That's right. And he's got a new movie coming out.
Yeah, and that movie's good. It's a very heartfelt, you know, he wrote and directed and he stars in it, and it's a real love letter to his hometown of Oakland. I think it's called Blind Spotting, but you know,
my friends tell me about it.
It's great. It's a good little movie. And like, you know, his was sort of, he's got an inspirational story, and that just, it happens week to week. I mean, he grew up, you know, kind of in a rough part of Oakland, and he, you know, he was athletic when he was a kid, and there were certain community sort of services available for him to sort of engage in track and kind of like become who he became, you know. So there's no shortage of inspiration in people's stories, generally speaking.
Yeah. Would you want to have more of the girls from the show come on? Because I know that you had Allie and Betty come on and speak with them.
You know, Kia was on. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess I should. I mean, it's like, I don't know why I haven't. I guess I should, like, because, like, it gets to a point where, like, if I'm going to have one, I'm going to have all of them. So,
right.
But, you know, like, Betty and I had Betty and Allison and Kia for the wrestling stuff. I had Chavo on. I had Genji Kohan on. I had Liz and Carly. And I had all the writers on. Maybe after, you know, during season 3, you know, when, you know, some of those characters start to come out more and stuff. But I know Kate Nash has a musical career that, you know, she's fairly popular in the UK. And I know Sunita does interesting dance things. Like there's definitely stories there. I just haven't done it, but I guess I should.
Have you been able to bond with like Jackie, because she also does like stand up? Like, is there like, and you know, you
Jackie obviously... and I have bonded for centuries. You know, she's a
she's
very
awesome.
Specific type of Jew that I'm familiar with. as a Jew, there's a shorthand there. It can go either way, but. Yeah, I know Jackie.
We have a few more quick questions from the chat if this is
a
good time.
Yeah, hop on in.
All right, so we've got the 1232 squad who wants to know, is there anything that you might, if you could go back to the first season of GLOW, is there any decision that you might want to do differently or have another stab at?
Wait, there's one shot.
Yeah?
Yeah, actually. Like, I didn't think, like, you know, there's a shot where, but, you know, the weird thing is like, you know, when you get into this type of thing, you know, my sensitivity to what I was doing or what was happening at that moment is going to be very specific. And a lot of times the magic of cinema, you know, no one really notices that. Mm-hmm. But I thought that the scene where Liberty Bell and, or no, where it's actually, it's Allison as Ruth and Betty as her character. Why am I forgetting her first name?
Debbie,
yeah. Where they have that fight, and then I'm sort of looking at them, and then I visualize the wrestling thing where I'm just sitting there in my face thinking.
Yeah.
They're like where they're zooming in on my face. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't think that I was selling it as good as I could. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't think my look was as sort of like, oh, yeah, I get, you know, I can see the future. I dumb little six-second thing, I'm like, I could have nailed that a little better.
Nice. That's awesome. Gary D wants to know how the cats are adapting to the new house.
Great. Awesome. The cats, like right. It's like they're, it's astounding. Like, because I have like I have two oldies, you know, like LaFonda and Monkey are like 14. And then I got this crazy dude, Buster, like who's a very intelligent, strange cat. But they all have a lot of space and they have stairs, so the oldies get to go up and down the stairs and get a little exercise. And Buster just has plenty of room to run around. None of them are trying to get out. They haven't destroyed too much.
Nice.
Have they? No, just some vomit issues. But the furniture's intact so far, and they love the house. It's really nice that they have the space.
Glad to hear it as a fellow cat dad.
Okay.
Jay Becker wants to know, how much do you discuss the script between the characters and actors before filming? Are there meetings? Do you call each other? Do you talk at the table read? And do the writers talk to you and get your input on the process?
Well, there's no table reads per episode. You know, I don't know. They don't. I think it's probably a time thing. You know, we got a lot to do.
Right.
And and most of the shots are big shots because of the number of people. But, you know, certainly, you know, if we have questions of the other actor or if we have questions of the writer, we do it. The writers are always there for their episodes. They're always on set. And Nick is more than Sasha or Rachel, and I can't remember. There were some other writers around too. It's bad of me. I'm very bad with names, but you know, Nick will, like, more than the other ones, he'll do variations. You know, like, we'll be on set and we'll do the scene, and he'll be like, he'll come up to me like, "Why don't you try this line? Maybe you should try this one," and certainly, you know, when we're doing a scene. Depending who the director is, you know, we'll do a couple variations on things. And working with Allison, like finding, you know, what it is that's happening is certainly a group effort. And it certainly happens between us. We definitely have conversations like that. And, you know, when you're off camera, like we all make it a point to be there for the other actor. You know, that there's no one leaving. You know, to let someone get their coverage with the script supervisor. So we kind of do that kind of stuff for each other. But there's whenever there's conversation necessary, it happens.
And one last quick question. Michelle asks, Sam is smoking a lot. Do you smoke in real life?
I used to. I smoked, and that's why I can do it like I smoked. I smoked for years. And those cigarettes are awful. Those herbals that they use, the stage cigarettes, are just terrible. And
it's really the Mad Men thing where it's not like a real cigarette. It's
No, they're very irritating. And I really try to minimize it, you know. So like, you know, because you do inhale them and they're just gross and they fuck your voice up. Ooh, sorry, they screw your voice up and that's they. Fine. But so like this season, like I just told them to, you know, sort of pick their places. There was a scene last season where me and Allie are in the car, and she takes a hit of the cigarette, and we did that. We're in a moving thing, you know, on a trailer. Mm-hmm. And we had to do it so many times. We were so smoked out. It was so awful.
Oh, no. It's like a hot box in there.
And it was just like one after the other. And then you got to keep track with where they're at.
Oh, continuity. Yeah.
What's happening? on my like this. Well, yeah, continuity, but yeah, and also just sort of like, yeah, where was I at in the cigarette? So I try to, you know, to keep it. I'm definitely not smoking them off camera, and I'm definitely trying to, you know, let them be. It looks like I'm smoking a lot, but like if you really look at how many times I'm on screen and whatever, I was like. At times during the seconds, I'm like, "Do we have to? Do you want me to smoke? Because I will, but like, it's but I'll do it. I'll do it. You know, I'll take a hit."
Watching you smoke in the hospital scenes, that was hilarious. I was like, "Oh my god, they really did that! I totally forgot." And they had the.
I think you did, yeah.
Yeah, and they
you used to be able to smoke in a hospital.
I think you could anywhere.
Everywhere. No limitations. That's exactly what Little Egypt and Godiva talked about with when you guys going to Vegas. Yeah. I'm saying like, oh man, it's Vegas where everybody's smoking smoke all around. Still, so you're still interested. Yeah, season 3 is gonna be really interesting. Then.
Yeah, I have no idea what's gonna happen. We haven't got a. Did we get picked up? I don't know. I don't think so.
I mean, like I'm pretty good about saying shows being picked up on Netflix, and that one 100%.
Good.
I'd love to know like what goes on for you when I don't know if someone's calling you in the morning saying like, dude, you just got nominated, or if you're paying attention, if you're not paying attention for like the different stuff that's happened, like the SAG or Emmys.
I don't have a Google search on myself or anything. Like I tend to get things secondhand mostly. You know, like either Brendan tells me or whatever. Yeah, you know, being nominated, I was nominated for the SAG Awards and Critics' Choice Awards. I don't know that any, like, somebody texted me, but I don't know.
So, hey, by the way, you got nominated for a huge award.
What was it like when you went to the awards last year? I mean, you're sitting there and you're like one of the nominees.
It was pretty amazing because, like, at some point years ago before I started the podcast, I really had given, you know, let go of the idea of any of this happening. So the fact that it's happening. It's all gravy to me. Like it's all like it's sort of astounding. But because I had let it go in a very real way, I'm very ready for it all. Like there's nothing is really jarring me. You know, like I've done the work. Right. You know, I can show up for this stuff. But yeah, the award thing was wild. It was exciting. I had to buy a nice suit, and the SAG Awards specifically, the Critics' Choice was good. You know, I was happy to be nominated. I didn't assume I would win, and I didn't. But I liked the guy who won a lot, and I was happy he did because he's great. Walton Goggins.
Walton is great. Yeah,
it's great. He's great. And he's so great in that. And then at the SAG Awards, what was great was that like it just felt nice to be recognized by the actors. Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of them I talked to. Like Well, not most of them, but a lot of them had been in the garage. Like, Susan Sarandon was sitting behind me, and I'm like, I know her. Tracy Letts had been in the week before. I'm like, I know Tracy. Like, and, you know, Sam Rockwell, I know Sam. Like, I talked to all these people. So, like, I was able to, like, sort of like, hey, what's up? Yeah, I'm here now. You know? what do you know? So, I certainly didn't expect to win, and I didn't. But... when I was at the SAG Awards in my Tom Ford suit, our table was situated in such a way where, you know, people had to walk to get to other tables. They walked by and Frances McDormand was coming towards me and I was like, oh my God, because I'd like her to do the podcast, but I don't know if she knows me, whatever. But I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to, you know, and I'm like, hey, Frances, I'm Mark Maron. You know, and she's like, I know who you are. and I thought it was because of the podcast, but she goes, you're great on that show. Everyone knew that asshole.
So I thought, that's amazing.
I thought that's kind of like winning. That was certainly
absolutely
winning.
Yeah.
That's an award in and of itself, right?
Yeah. Right. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Yeah.
To be, I feel like that would be the best award to be nominated for by your peers, and to be able to be surrounded by your peers and to be celebrating all of yourselves. And
I was proud of myself, and you know, I think I do a pretty good job as an actor, and I'm definitely getting better at it. I didn't really anticipate being nominated for an Emmy, and I wasn't. But you know, I tried to be. You know, there's certain hoops you got to jump through to try to, you know, get your, you know, there's so much content. And I don't even like to use that word. There's so many, and I'm sorry I did. There's so many shows, and it's, you know, nobody has time to watch everything. And sort of like just being a member of the Emmy voting community, like the amount of stuff that came in the mail, it was embarrassing. I'm like, you know, this seems so wasteful. Like just like boxes and boxes of screeners, and I just felt bad to like they literally went from they just went right from the porch to the garbage, you know? Because like, what am I going to do with all that stuff? I don't even have room in my house for it, you know. Right. But You know, I watch the shows that I watch, and I tried to, you know, watch the other people who were up for nominations. But in terms of, you know, my work, like, look, I've never been I'm not a big award winner for whatever reason, you know, and it's never a matter of whether I'm doing a job or not. You never know why, you know, who knows. But the point is, like, you know, I know that I'm doing a good job and I'm getting better. I know that the second season, in terms of my acting, was better than the first for me. And also, I think for everybody watching, I'm very proud to be part of a show that was nominated. I'm thrilled to death that Betty is nominated. Yeah. I'm sad that Allison didn't get nominated, right. But we're going to be okay. but the fact that Betty got nominated is just spectacular because she's a real unique monster, that one.
Yeah. Well, I feel like there's so many more highs and lows and like areas
I
for all the characters.
In a loving way.
Yeah, of course.
All the characters got to develop a lot more this season. It wasn't just you. Like, we really got to see these characters fleshed out because you didn't have to lay the groundwork of like, this is Glow, this is what's happening. Yeah. We really got to see
a
lot more.
Yeah, show.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, yeah. And Betty and Kia had their own episode, which I thought was great. And you got to, you did get to know quite a few of them a little more.
Yeah.
Which was interesting for me because I don't necessarily remember reading the scripts or picture it quite as well as when it's shot. So when I watch it, I'm like, oh, wow. Like the Kia Betty thing, I wasn't in that. So I didn't really, you know, read it. So when I saw it, it was like, wow, this is great. Yeah. You know, like it was really great.
I know the consensus among like everyone that I know is when season one came out, it was sort of like, wow, how can a season of television get better than this? And then season two came out, we're like, that's how.
Yeah, oh, good. Yeah, I just love the work everyone's doing. I love working with everybody. And like, you know, I did a lot of scenes with Betty, a lot of scenes with Allison. And to see them work, they're very different actresses. And like, it's wild to be, like, it's hard to do scenes when you're just sort of like, oh, look at her, she's killing it. You know, like in your head, like, you know, Sam's not thinking that, thinking that.
Right. So when they're going at it in the hospital room, you know, and they're both like revealing everything and they're both crying and doing all stuff. Like, I don't know if you're on set or if like you're watching it, but are you tearing up? Are you kind of like getting choked up watching
sometimes
it?
Sometimes. If I'm like, a lot of times because I got used to it doing my own show, I sit in the Video Village with the writers and the producers and they let me. I'm just like, I'm just going to sit with you guys and watch. So, I definitely feel it. Yeah, if I'm watching it, if I'm at a monitor and I can see it, or if I'm there, you know, I feel it. I always get choked up and I got to stop it. But I figure it's okay. You know, it's okay to have those emotions. Like, you know, if you know, they're not, I can feel them, and you know, I'm not. You know, they probably read somewhere on a deep way with people. But.
Well, since you're here in person, I have to let you know that the one time I cried in season two was from your line delivery in episode 7, my favorite episode of the season, the hospital episode when you tell Ruth that you need her.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You got me, man.
Well, I was choked up too. You know, I get choked up a lot with her, like in the character. But Sam stuffs it, so it's okay
for sure. Yeah. Well, we were talking about like the season one was all about setting up these characters, and season two largely about subverting expectations on the characters. And I think that's so important, and I think that's why people gravitate to Sam is because they know Sam the asshole, and maybe they're fond of Sam the asshole in a loving love-hate way.
Right.
But season two, we get to see exactly who Sam is and who Sam discovers himself to be.
I think that's right. I think that, like, you know, with the daughter character, with Britt, and certainly with, you know, Allison, as that thing evolves, that, like, you find that, you know, he does appreciate her, you know, but, like, it's not unusual for, you know, people, you know, I don't want to say men, to sort of be withholding of that, you know, for whatever reason, you know, whether that's just the way he's always been or it's to protect himself or whatever. But you know, it turns out that everybody gets a little more human this season. That's for sure. And the thing about Betty is, you know, and I was thinking about this, too, like in the first season, like they were amazing, Betty and Allison. But if you really think about, you know, the heavy lifting Betty had to do as an actress to make her situation believable, that, you know, that she, her best friend fucks her husband and then she's got to be around that person. Like, for that to work, I mean, like, when you really think about the levels that she had to, you know, process emotionally as an actress, it's a well-earned nomination.
Agreed. Now, if and when Glow gets picked up for season 3, because then we know we don't have an actual announcement, but we're hoping.
Yeah.
What is the thing that you hope to see happen for the show and for Sam?
Well, I don't, like, I have no idea how Sam is going to handle Vegas. I assume that Sam knows Vegas. I feel like he's been to Vegas. I'm curious to see what they do with Horatio Sands, who sort of shows up. Yeah. I like Horatio. I like the character. I'd like to see what's going to happen between me and that guy. Yeah. And also, I'd like to see what kind of trouble. Like, I assume that Sam will have some challenges in Vegas. I'm not sure what they are. Maybe we find out he has this horrendous gambling problem. I don't know. But I think Sam's obviously set up for some other personal fall of some kind. Seems to be what they do to Sam at some point.
It's going to be amazing.
I'm excited.
I cannot wait. That's going to be the best.
So I like to. I always have like asking a fun question, and my fun question is, knowing what you know about the ladies, both like just the actresses like as themselves and their wrestling ability and what they've learned in the wrestling ring, they at the end of the series there is a battle royal.
Yeah,
I'd love to know in your opinion if there was a real battle royal between those women, who you think would be standing?
Ooh. Oh, who was in the ring at that point? It was Liberty Bell and...
Just in general, if you threw them all in there, like, just based on, like, whatever they're doing. Because, like, Brittany Young came here, and she said that it would be Ellen would be the one standing, Fortune Cookie. I asked Rebecca on the carpet, and she said Kia, because Kia's the real wrestler. So, like, my question is just to figure out, it's just, like, I like to know every single person. It's, like, are they always going to sit there and say Kia because she's the real wrestler? Or if someone has a different opinion of, like, no, this person's sneaky, or this person would figure out how to win...
Interesting. I don't know. The easy answer would be Kia, but they're all getting sort of, you know, very proficient, and they're, you know, and Fortune Cookie has a very, like, I'd like to see her style kind of like evolve, like, because, like, it seems like as wrestlers, everyone seems to get their moves together based on, you know, what their physical capabilities are, and it becomes sort of their persona in terms of, you know, what they are known for. Also, Mariana, like, is a big girl and sort of disarming in a way. Like, her character has not been as utilized as it could be. I think that she could be a surprise powerhouse.
Vicky Viking.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think awesome. So. I love that answer.
I'm excited to see what the girls do in Vegas.
Yeah, me too. I'm excited to see what everyone does in Vegas. Yeah.
It's a whole other world. What was it like for you in Vegas?
Well, that's why I'm so excited about season 3, because I cannot wait to see what it would be like if all these girls were stuck in a hotel, if that's where they're at, and what it would be like for them to be running around the casino floor barefooted, eating at the buffet in character, getting in trouble, because that's what 20-year-old girls did. We got in trouble.
You know,
there's a lot of stuff
going
on.
What did you do?
I was a good girl. Didn't do anything wrong.
Okay.
But I saw
Hollywood Godiva. They like staying out late and partying.
Oh, partying with the rock stars and, you know, busting into different shows, all sorts of things.
Oh,
I mean, it was
good.
Out of control. There's so much material there.
Yeah.
Oh, but I definitely would love to see Sam really stretch and go down a dark hole.
Yeah.
I really want to see that.
I think that feels like it should happen. Yeah, how do we save Sam?
Yeah. I think he loses the entire budget of the show. Something he gambles
like that. Oh,
in,
that's
you
interesting.
Know?
Like, yeah.
Oh, man, that would be great. And the girls bring you back out. You know, they have to work for free because there's no money to support the show. But
he's always teetering on the edge of that. I feel that that might be in the cards for him. I'd have no idea.
Yeah.
I'm up for it.
So much trouble for Sam.
A lot more fake cigarettes, it feels like.
Oh, yeah.
Especially in Vegas. Yes, you will.
Did you see that turn coming? Did you see the end being them going to Vegas? I didn't see that. I didn't see that coming.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
I thought miraculously somehow they're going to have at least another season of doing the production. I had no idea that, like, okay, now we're going to Vegas.
No, I didn't. I generally don't see anything coming.
You're like me then. Great. That's great. You're in the show. I'm always like, really? Like, wow.
Yeah, like when she's my daughter, I'm like, everyone knew but me. I'm like, what's going on? And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, like, I don't see anything coming. You know, it makes sense. I didn't see it. There's no way to see it coming, that Horatio or that, the strip club connection and all that stuff. It
was perfect.
But you know, we were talking a little bit about that before, that there's some balance before we started broadcasting. There's some balance that this show rides a very fine edge in that. You know, because nothing is really being hidden in how you see these characters, but somehow or another, as dark as things get on the show, it doesn't drag you down. Like you don't feel hopelessness or desperation or in a way that that anyone becomes unsalvageable or pathetic, because there's some line that it rides because of the spectacle of the wrestling and their ability to go into these other characters, which get as much stage time as the real characters. There's this interesting balance happening between the fantastic, you know, spectacle of wrestling and the sort of fairly, you know, heavy real lives that some of them are living. You know, and I know that a lot of the original Glow Girls went through some serious shit, and there was some raw shit going on. And, you know, it doesn't look the same. And certainly they're different characters, but there is a balance in this show that keeps it, you know, entertaining and engaging and not like, you know, like, oh, this feels so horrible for that. You know, like... Right. Like, and I think that's a real testament to the writing and to the look of the show. Because, like, there's heavy shit in that show. But you kind of like, it's so great. It's like, I went to an abortion clinic with Ruth. It's like, I love that show. You know, like, and, like somehow or another, it is able to transcend, which is what wrestling does for people.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what I love is so fascinating is that it's so, I think we talked to someone on the carpet about this, is that it's so relevant now. Yet you guys are staying completely true to the 80s within right. the show. So a lot of the topics and the conversations that have come up in this season really do teeter on the edge of things that are happening now.
No, definitely. Yeah. I mean, because they were happening mm-hmm. then. They yeah. just weren't framed in the same way. I mean, yeah. you know, the patriarchy or the paradigm, you know, it affected everyone, you know, men and women. And, you know, that's also what's interesting in talking about, you know, people's reaction to Sam. Yeah, because Sam, like, you know, he's not a sociopath. He's not a racist. He's not someone that doesn't, you know, ask for consent. You know, he's not, you know, he's just a guy of his time. Mm-hmm. And there's something about the conversation, you know, in terms of where we are at now. It's like, well, what are we going to do about those guys of their time who need to be, you know, who need to evolve? You know, you got to let them. And I think that, you know, if they're willing, and I think that's some the amazing sort of, you know, phenomenon of that guy, you know, being a likable character in the context of what's happening now. And all the other issues sort of around, you know, women's bodies and women's body image and women's positions and power. I mean, all that stuff is addressed. But I don't think, I don't know that they knew. Well, they obviously knew second season, but I just, like, it's relevant for women always. Mm-hmm. And it is interesting how it's addressed. And I think that we're not putting a shine on anything and we're not being preachy. And I don't think, and I think, do think we're being true to the time. Mm-hmm. But the issues have always existed.
So true. Well, do we have any other last minute questions? Because I feel like it's...
Well, just while we're on the subject of, like, what's happening in the 80s, and you spoke earlier about the wardrobe and the makeup and hair people and how amazing they are. I can't stop thinking about Russell's casual nice guy scumbag aesthetic.
Yeah.
And I just want to know, like, what is it about that specific look, or maybe Sam's look? Like, what's the key to just encapsulating? Because Russell has a look that hasn't been around since the 80s, but you see it immediately and you're like, whoa, whoa.
Just say it. He's got a perm.
Yeah, he's got a perm and a mustache.
Yeah, the fro and the mustache. But also, like, there's little things. I mean, just tucking your shirt in, you know, belts. You know, like those the pants were higher.
Yeah.
A lot of this stuff got kind of repurposed and reconfigured later. But, you know, with me, you know, those 70s-style bell-bottoms with those cowboy boots, they make you walk a certain way.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and not a lot of people wear that shit anymore. And all those 80s shirts I'm wearing, you know, and the mustache, sure, and the hair. But the, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to, like, nobody tucks in their shirt anymore.
So true. Well, thank you so much. I feel like that's a good place to end. Absolutely. Tucking in your shirt. But thank you again so much for coming
thank
on.
You.
We
thank
really
you for having
loved
me.
Having you. Amazing thank conversation. You. Thank you guys for tuning in. Be sure to subscribe, like, and comment to all of AfterBuzz's shows. And be sure to tune in another week, and hopefully we will be having more guests coming on very soon. Again, my name is Candace Cruz. You can find me on all my social media at Candace R. Cruz.
And I'm Ricky the Dragon Hong, and you can find me on all social media at Rick Hong, RickHong.
And you can find me at Little Egypt on all social media.
You can find me, but don't bother me, at Mark Maron.
And you can find me on all social media at Sundown Motel.
All right, we will see you guys next time.
Thank you.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.